The Rugby World Cup from The Times with Mark Suster.
We'll be with you every week with the latest from the tournament, looking at the prospects for the home nations and the other big guns, of course, and reviewing all the action on and off the field.
Find it at thetimes.co.uk or in iTunes.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers. Welcome to what is going to be a new Bugle. It's Chris here. I thought we'd give him a special intro because we're at the seaside celebrating. So Andy is just... Andy's just jumped in the sea, actually. Oh, Andy, no. Andy, that's a shark.
Andy, that's a shark. Oh.
Oh, okay. Well, it's okay. I'm sure he's going to be all right. And John's still here, so John can host. Oh, John, don't... Oh, no. John, come down from the cliff. Come down... Oh, no. Don't slip. Oh, no. He's taken a long time to fall. Well, in the meantime, I guess I quickly put together a... World Leader Special on Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Have a listen to that.
Top story, and there's only been one story on everyone's lips this week, and that story has been the OPEC summit. OPEC had a major summit. In fact, it was only its third in 47 years. So, for all you summit fans out there, this is a very rare one. It's akin to seeing a comet, or perhaps a glossy-mantled manicode. In fact, you could barely move for hundreds of socially awkward summit spotters in cagoules, excitedly scribbling into their notebooks before being dragged away by Saudi police.
They're like buses, aren't they, OPEC summits?
That's right.
You wait ages for one, and then it's completely pointless without fuel.
But what a summit it was, Andy. If you like oil and the people who produce it, this is your Super Bowl. But, of course, OPEC isn't just about the oil anymore. It's like they say in their brochure, come for the oil, stay for the inflammatory political rhetoric.
When you think that OPEC members include the likes of Iran, Iraq, Libya and Venezuela, they traditionally have some of the world's jauntiest leaders.
Dream team of lunacy.
I would like to see the OPEC summit every 6 months, just for the entertainment those leaders can provide.
Once again, the headlines were stolen by Ahmadinejad, who is fast becoming the Roger Federer of international lunacy. He just looks unbeatable.
When you think there's nothing for him to have a go at America over, he somehow, from somewhere, pulls out something at an incredible angle. And, yeah, it's great to watch if you're a fan of that kind of thing. You know, you've just got to admire class.
He referred to the American dollar as a worthless piece of paper. Now listen, Mahmoud, when you deny the Holocaust, that's one thing. When you talk of America as the great Satan, that's another thing. But you insult a country's currency. Oh, you just crossed the line, mister. You don't hear Americans criticising the Iranian rial, do you? No, because they know where the line is. Leave it out!
This week, Iran is voting on Friday in a general legislative election. But their campaign is only 1 week long. Now, surely this is more of a justification for a military invasion than any suggested nuclear weapons programme. They've got democracy, John, but they're not stringing it out long enough, and they need to be taught a lesson. Reports have suggested that more than 90% of independent and reformist candidates in Iran have been disqualified from standing. Now, I'm sure those conducting the candidate vetting process are keeping reform-minded candidates off the ballot paper for perfectly reasonable and above-board reasons. Maybe they're helping them spend more time with their families. Or perhaps they realise that democracy is flawed and these would-be candidates might find a more rewarding hobby. We just don't know. Also, posters with candidates' pictures on have been banned because the government says they're wasteful and lead to a costly and boring post-election clean-up, which is a magnificent reason. Yeah. Banning posters.
That is a great way of suppressing the will of the people. Saying, it's hard to tidy up afterwards. I appreciate that. At least make an effort.
They're also apparently planning to block internet access on polling day.
That's
the reason
true, yeah.
Given that, to make sure it's okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty much it. Their quote is that this will ensure unimpeded internet access for the government. How does other people having internet access impede their access? That's just not how the internet works. Embassy news now. And in a major development, news came out this week that the US would be establishing a diplomatic presence in Iran for the first time in 30 years. And this is quite a turnaround for President Bush, who had Iran in his catchy little axis of unpleasantness for almost the whole of his time in office. And it isn't a full embassy. It's kind of a halfway house to becoming one. It's a kind of emb. Its official name is, in fact, a US interest centre, which sounds as if it's a kind of modern museum showing what Americans are interested in. Rows and rows of glass presentational cases containing baseballs, Bibles, burgers, guns and hardcore pornography. A special interest centre carries out all the functions of an embassy, apart from the most important one, which is being called an embassy. So it's not actually so much a halfway house as a just fractionally short of a wholeway house. Britain, we've had an embassy there since 1997, when the new Labour government instigated a policy of reaching out to rogue states. Oh, Andy. Rogue states. Do you remember them? They were such innocent days. Before the days of calling a nation a terrorist state, you simply went with rogue, or even scoundrel.
Really?
A scoundrel state, or just a simple naughty state.
Well, I think roguish would be better than rogue. Or raffish, maybe. Certainly not one you'd want to leave alone with your daughter, or your oil interests.
This decision has split the Bush administration, and some have called it the end of the Cheney era, which I think in future may be a very useful language euphemism for a disastrous period in someone's life. How was work today, dear? It was a non-stop Cheney era. That's how it was. I see my divorce as the end of my Cheney era. Can the Chicago Cubs win the World Series and halt their 100-year Cheney era? Cheney was unsurprisingly favouring military strikes, and the State Department favoured diplomacy. And military strikes are now Cheney's answer to absolutely anything. He locked his keys in his car last week and ordered 3 F-16 bombers to fire missiles at it. Yes, he completely destroyed the car, but to be fair, he got his keys back. The recent Iranian missile testing and aggressive rhetoric with Israel had concerned some that Iran was about to become a second Iraq, whereas the US State Department and Europe now prefer it to become a second North Korea. And does that not indicate, Andy, just how badly Iraq has gone? That a country becoming a second North Korea is now potentially a positive move. We really have reset those yardsticks.
Because only a couple of minutes ago, it seems, Bush was prepared to personally ride a tungsten carbide-coated donkey across the border from America into Iran and challenge Ahmadinejad to a bare-bonced headbutt to the death. But now it's all lovey-dovey. And we've seen this before, and I think there's a bit of a Trojan horse thing going on here as well. Because I think it'll turn out, so, you know, it appears to be a nice parting gesture on the part of Bush, and he'll probably, you know, say suddenly he'll offer to give Ahmadinejad a nice giant wooden replica of Tom Brady. And then Ahmadinejad will parade the giant Brady around the streets of Tehran, and then all of a sudden, at the dead of night, out pops the entire US army and lays waste to the entire of Iran, whilst Bush stands on the top of Ahmadinejad's house, grabbing his nuts and saying, "How'd you like that, eh? How'd you like it?"
This diplomacy follows Bush's recent statement that he didn't want to be remembered as a warmonger, which is like someone leaving a fancy dress party saying they didn't want to be remembered as a cowboy when they come dressed as a cowboy, spent the entire evening on a mechanical bull, and had only uttered the two syllables ye and ha. Iranian election now, and Iran claims that it is the most democratic nation in the Middle East, which is probably a bit like saying you're the least racist person at a Klan rally, but, you know, they may still be right, you know, credit where it's due. Iran is a governing mixture between democracy and theocracy, and what a great mixture that is. That is like mixing orange juice and milk. They might work separately, but put them in a glass together and you've got one unpalatable mess. It's currently underway, the election. They're voting literally as we speak. And bugle favourite whack job Mahmoud Ahmadinejad is facing serious competition from opposing presidential candidate Mir Hossein Mousavi. And reports are coming in right now out of an unprecedented turnout in Iran. Interest has spiked in the campaign after a very fractious TV debate. It was like boxers getting into a fight during the weigh-in. You can't help but feel it was slightly contrived to increase the audience, but you can't deny that it was effective.
Yep, this, I don't know how to break this to you, Buglers, but this could be the end
for Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the little man with a big mouth, is right up against it, it being the will of the Iranian electorate, according to the latest opinion polls. So he could well be packing his bags, popping his bluffer's guide to nuclear weapons in his knapsack, giving one last cuddle to his little toy Israel that he used to practice his speeches on, and handing over the keys to Iran to someone a bit less gobby. And I guess from a selfish point of view, John, from our point of view, it would be quite a shame if Ahmadinejad goes. I can't imagine a more moderate successor who will have quite the same knack of pulling out entertainingly left-field swipes at the rest of the world. There was literally no subject on which Ahmadinejad couldn't turn to having a pop at Israel or America. I remember just a couple of years ago, Johnny, he was the BBC's guest on-course commentator during the Open Golf. And Peter Alice said to him, "So, Mahmoud, it looks like Tiger's found a nasty bit of rough there." And Ahmadinejad replies, "That's right, Peter. He's going to have to play safe here. Just pop it back onto the fairway and take his medicine, I think." But if I was in his situation, I'd probably get my 8-iron out and try to wreak the destruction of the fascistic Zionist boil on the face of humanity that is the state of Israel. But no, it looks like Tiger's going to use the 5-iron and take a lick at the green. Bold stuff for the world number one, the American shitbag. Over now to Ken Brown at the 12th.
In a major change, Mousavi's wife has been out on the campaign trail with him, and he has said that if elected, he will review laws that discriminate against women. That's quite a lot of laws to review there, Mousavi. That may prove to be a bigger job than you want to acknowledge. Patrols of morality police regularly enforce standards of dress on Iran's streets, and that's not fashion police, as in, that tie doesn't go with those shoes, or you're wearing stripes with stripes, what are you thinking? This is a literal fashion police. Stopping women in the street and charging them with inappropriate dress laws. You should send the Iranian fashion police to the streets of Newcastle on a Friday night. Get things in perspective a bit for them. Shock them into their senses.
I think you and me, we could probably do with something like that. We could do with a state telling us how to dress.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, official state fashion, that's not everyone's cup of tea. I mean, that really is taking the nanny state too far, isn't it? Put this on or you're not going out. Can't we have Mary Poppins back?
Apparently the country is more divided than at any time since the revolution. And it is never a good sign when you're comparing unrest levels to a period just before a major revolution. There does seem a real possibility that Ahmadinejad may lose this election. Part of his concern is one of demographics. Iran is a young country, 60% of the population are under 30, and it's perhaps because of this that Ahmadinejad has been using Obama's "Yes, we can" slogan to inspire voters. So he's not only an anti-Semite, Andy, he's also a plagiarist. Yeah, Ahmadinejad supporters themselves are still fanatical. Now, as he left one rally this week, one woman apparently approached him, asking him to cure her child. What's he been telling the Iranian people? And he's the David Copperfield of Middle Eastern politics, by which I mean he's slightly magical, charismatic and deeply creepy.
Mousavi is more of a women fan than...
I mean, in the political sense, John.
Calm down, lawyers. He's happily married to a former university chancellor, artist, writer and political scientist called Zahra Ranavard. She sounds like she could hold her own in a conversation, John.
Yeah.
Mousavi is also the president of the Iranian Academy of Arts, and he and his wife are both keen painters. So if he does unseat Ahmadinejad, Iran would be going very much from oil-based economy to oil-based paints, from brushes with America to brushes with genuine sable hair bristles, from en garde to avant-garde, from dada to dada, from pointed schisms to pointillism, from real dick to surreal pick, from ease off to easel. Unplug me, Tom, it's got to end.
In the last days of the campaign, Ahmadinejad was in an especially fiery mood, which is, I guess, like saying that an inferno is being extra fiery. Even at its least fiery, it's still an inferno. And he said of the opponents attacking him that such insults and accusations against the government are a return to Hitler's methods, to repeat lies and accusations until everyone believes those lies. Just to put this Hitler slur in context, this is coming from a man who denies the Holocaust. I think he loses the right to use the Hitler insult, Andy.
The Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps in Iran, John, have shown that they perhaps still haven't quite got the hang of democracy by warning that any attempted popular revolution would be crushed. I guess it's a policy of sorts. That's democracy. You know, if people are opposed to it, they just need to vote the government back in.
Yeah.
Now it's time for a multiple choice Iranian election competition question. And the question is this. Ahmadinejad used his final TV appearance of the campaign to accuse his opponents of conspiring with which country to try to discredit him? Can you guess? Was it A, the cricket-loving Caribbean island nation of Antigua and Barbuda? Was it B, the sparsely populated desert-based southwest African country of Namibia? C, the tiny peace-loving alpine mountain tax haven state of Liechtenstein? Or D, Israel? Think about it for a bit. Pens down. The answer was C, Liechtenstein. Then he had a good laugh with the guy who'd played a prank on his teleprompter, re-recorded it, and went with D, Israel. So if you've got the question right, you have won the chance to apply for a seat in the new Iranian cabinet as Minister for Car Horn Honking.
In fact, Ahmadinejad, Andy, is so concerned about losing this election that he spent his time recently handing out free potatoes to the poor in an attempt to get them to vote for him. Potatoes for votes, Andy. It's the new political sleaze.
Surely the poor would want something a bit more exciting than a potato, though, John. Well, you're just giving them their staple diet.
I don't know. I mean, the government has been handing out 400,000 tonnes of free spuds. It is the incredible thing. The situation got so bad with this that his political opponents during rallies have apparently started chanting, "Death to potatoes." That just doesn't have the same ring to it as "Death to America," Andy. But, you know, I suppose at least it's a move in the right direction. They have to blame something, how bad their lives are. Why not point the finger at the potato? Death to potatoes! They're a best an accompaniment in a meal! Death to potatoes! On their own terms, they are completely tasteless! One thing that Ahmadinejad's opponents have been using against him has been a YouTube clip. And he's been ridiculed in this clip for being crazy. I don't know, it seems a bit late in the day to be calling him crazy now, Andy. I don't think he's ever lied about his mad levels. In this YouTube clip, he was talking about a speech he gave to the UN in 2005. And he said, and I quote, "A member of the Iranian delegation told me, 'I saw a light that surrounded you. I sensed it myself too. I felt the atmosphere change. All the leaders in the audience didn't blink for 27, 28 minutes. I'm not exaggerating when I'm saying they didn't blink. Everybody had been astonished. They'd opened their eyes and ears to see what is the message from the Islamic Republic.'" Come on, you know what you're getting with him. He puts all his crazy potatoes on the table. And that is some classic Mahmood right there. "They didn't blink for 28 minutes. I'm not exaggerating." Well, I suppose he isn't really exaggerating, because for that to be the case, he'd need to be operating from at least a grain of truth. What he's doing is just making shit up.
For the sake of balance, if any buglers are considering voting in the Iranian election, here are the other candidates running. Mohsen Rezai, the former head of the Revolutionary Guards. Mehdi Karoubi, who has pledged to take the middle path in Iran. Then, of course, there are the fringe candidates. Amjad Kasumi of the Iranian Carrot Party, running on a carrots for breakfast, lunch and dinner ticket. Very much an outsider, but maybe he could take on this potato policy of Ahmadinejad. Farzad, the human snookerball Nazarami of the Persian Circus Party, a radical Islamist and acrobat. Bibopalula Shesma Baibi, Iranians with names that sound like 1950s rock and roll lyrics party. And loopy loop screeching Jalal Banguri and the Toastmaster of Tehran from the Iranian branch of the Monster Raving Loony Party. And finally, of course, Derek Jeter of the New York Yankees. Bit of a surprise for Jeter, that one. I think a couple of factors got mixed up, and he's running in the Iranian election, whilst hardline cleric Hossein Al-Kaboodle has been playing shortstop for the Bronx Bombers.
Top story this week, Iran news! Sorry, I got the tone of that all wrong, Andy. Top story this week, Iran news. Andy, it's important to remember what is going on in Iran at the moment, especially seeing as the news cycle is going to be dominated by Michael Jackson for at least the next week. In fact, such is the extent to which this is going to affect global coverage of Iran, you might almost think that Michael Jackson was actually working for Ahmadinejad. Almost, but let me, for vital legal reasons now, point out, not quite. So what have been the big changes in Iran over the last week? Well, to summarise, violence has gone up. Hope for the future has gone down, Supreme Leader Khamenei has gone crazy, Mousavi has gone quiet, and Ahmadinejad is doing just what he does best, being an arsehole. He really is testament to the theory, Andy, that to find happiness, you should find something that you love doing, and just do it as much as you can. He's inspirational in a way, but absolutely only in that way.
Well, I guess his counterpoint to you calling him an arsehole would be to say you spent most of last week dressed in a blue dress, wearing high heels and women's sunglasses.
And I think we both have to concede that the other one had a point.
So it has been another week in which the official silver medalist from the election, Mir Hossein Mousavi, has been striding around in a T-shirt with the slogan, "I ran for president of Iran and all I got was this lousy fixed election and subsequent violent crackdown." Been a kind of violent pantomime sequence in Iran, John. One side saying the election was rigged, the other side saying, "Oh, no, it wasn't. Oh, yes, it was. Oh, no, it wasn't. And to prove it, I'm going to hit you with this massive stick." Only 105 out of 290 MPs attended Ahmadinejad's victory party, suggesting either that even his own party have certain misgivings about popping open the bubbly when he might well have faked the bubbly. This isn't champagne, Mahmood. It's badger piss. And I don't care how bubbly it is. Or that his wife is really bad at making party nibbles. I'm guessing it was the former rather than the latter.
Why not throw a victory party? Well, there are certainly a good few reasons why not, but he probably pre-booked the hall and didn't want to lose his deposit. Also, Ahmadinejad's victory party, that has got to be a very awkward party to DJ. Good luck getting people onto the dance floor there. Very difficult to get the tone just right. Especially because, as you say, only 105 people turned up out of 290 possible invitees. Ouch. That was not an evite that you wanted landing in your inbox. That necessitated 185 separate excuses. Oh, I was busy. My dog ate my invitation. My dog was killed by the Basij. I got the dates mixed up. You haven't actually won the election. I felt ill. That's just six right there. You need another 179.
Well, rumour has it, though, that this has kind of shown that the Iranian government is now as split as an ice cream-covered banana splaying its legs in a painful-looking gymnastic pose whilst jointly winning a poker hand in a large Croatian city, whilst also singing a 2005 joint album by the rock bands Zeke and Peter Pan Speed Rock, divorcing, wondering how to knock down two remaining non-adjacent bowling pins, and drinking a bottle of wine left over from an aeroplane meal. Technically, to explain that last bit, a 187-millilitre bottle of wine is called a split. So that's not quite as many split-based puns as my North Korea effort the other day.
No, I to be honest, I just don't know how to respond to that joke, Andy. Right. It's a real roller coaster of emotion that I'm feeling. It's just, you know, I'm impressed in a way. I'm absolutely furious as well.
What, because you didn't get there first?
Definitely not that, no. Violence over the last week has indeed increased dramatically, depressingly, demoralisingly and disgustingly, and it's clearly going to be best for us to skip over the particulars of the terrible scenes that have been witnessed over the last week. Suffice to say that, to put it in the mildest way I can possibly state, it's been a bad week for the image of motorbikes. Also, it just may be, Andy, that journalism has significantly changed after this, because now technology may well have changed how history is recorded forever. Just think how different our view of history would be if camera phones were always available. Imagine people at the crucifixion just standing there, holding up their cameras, tweeting their friends saying, "Still alive, this is taking forever." Capturing that moment of poetic wonder, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? And having it become a YouTube smash. Step aside, Pharisees getting a nut shot. There'd be trillions of views alongside the usual negative comments underneath of, "You suck! This sucks!" And if you like this, check out my website.
Well, the situation has led in Iran to arguably the most uneasy standoff since 8-year-old Timmy Watkins was selected to play fly half for England against the mighty New Zealanders in 1979, despite never having played rugby, weighing 4 stone and having asthma. Now, admittedly, if I may explain that joke as well, it's dependent on our listeners having the knowledge that the term standoff is another term for the rugby position of fly half, roughly for our American listeners, the equivalent of quarterback. Hence his unease, the joke stands.
Maybe, Andy, it's time for you to consider using audio footnotes for all of your jokes.
I already do. I just don't publish them.
What's happening in Iran does seem now to be about much more than just this election, and instead concerns the future direction of the entire Islamic Republic. Now, option one, do they take an even more militaristic, even more isolationist stance and move towards becoming more like North Korea? Obviously, let's clearly hope not. North Korea should be the perfect warning sign for them there. That is a miserable country to live in or even near. Yes, it has one phenomenal water slide. We know that.
But remember, only one man can use it, and everyone else isn't even allowed to watch him use it. That would be something. Or, option two, do they open up, dial down the crazy, and we increase the possibility of us all living happily ever after? Tough call for a round to make that, and it really is worth restating to them that they would not be able to have a go on that water slide. Musavi this week instructed supporters to release green balloons into the sky and take videos or photos of the scene and post them online to show the world that they're still in solidarity with one another. And I hope that works out, but I am guessing that the Revolutionary Guard are going to see that as an invitation to some impromptu target practice.
Well, things have certainly got pretty niggly, John, between Iran and Britain. And a game of diplomatic expulsion tennis has begun. They kicked two of ours out, we kicked two of theirs out. It's looking like we could be sliding into a grinding baseline rally like two Spaniards on a slow clay court. Iran claimed that the British diplomats had been, quote, involved in activities incompatible with their status.
Right.
Which is pretty vague to me, John. I don't know what activity there would be. Hopscotch, maybe?
Yeah.
Or unicycling. I don't know, that's not really what you want your diplomats to do.
Or it's like you trying an overhead kick in football, Andy. It's incompatible with your status as a player.
Well, it's incompatible only because I don't need to resort to that kind of flashy shit, John. I've got a complete passing game. I know if I'm having to do an overhead kick, I'm in the wrong position, which I never am. Basically, these poor diplomats, though, John, they've basically become pawns in a game of political chess. But as with most games of political chess, the pieces just get knocked over by the players swinging their penises to and fro across the board.
What? I'm so glad we've only played chess once.
Well, what a game.
What a game.
What a game.
What a game of chess.
The one time John and I played chess, we were doing a gig in Liverpool together with an Irish comedian called Johnny Candon and staying in a triple room in a cheap bed and breakfast, to which Johnny Candon took the only key, went back and accidentally locked us out. So John and I were then left on the streets of Liverpool at around, I don't know, 1:30 in the morning.
Sure, sure.
The only place we could find to go was the local YMCA shelter.
Yeah.
So then, like, I don't know, two prisoners of war, we made a chessboard out of a sheet of paper. Yeah. And as I recall, I demolished you with a quite scintillating counterattack.
To be honest, I don't remember much of the details of the game. I merely remember just seeing over your shoulder the various smack addicts coming in and out and thinking, this will be the strangest game of chess that's taking place in Britain at this moment. This diplomatic expulsion tennis has really been done more out of routine than anger. We're just going through the motions of this bad relationship, Britain and Iran now, Andy. It used to be really passionate, genuine, spontaneous hate on both sides. But now look at us, staring at each other across a restaurant table, unable to think of anything nasty to say about each other. Maybe it's time to just give up and just be friends. Well, I know it sounds negative, but it's just not working out. Because in his speech last Friday, Ayatollah Khamenei called Britain the most evil of the hungry wolves in the ambush on Iran. We're back! Britain's back, number one, the most evil of the hungry wolves, not the second most evil. I mean, he says that, but I just don't think he can possibly mean it. A Middle East analyst said there is a deep-rooted belief in Iran that Britain's always up to something, is never passive and always devious. I mean, that's a lovely thing to say, but I think they're just trying to be nice, Andy. We got nothing anymore.
The Ayatollah, or as a football manager would call him, the lad Khamenei, picked out Britain for special dissing, the most evil of the enemies of Iran. He accused us in Britain, John, of trying to foment unrest in his country. But if we have been trying to foment unrest, we've chosen a pretty stupid time to do it, given that Iran has been fomenting unrest in Iran, and quite a lot of it. So I think any British fomented unrest would probably slip under the radar. I just hope the government wouldn't be so stupid as to waste our fomenting at such a stupid time. Britain, the most evil, John. Now, this is an unexpected side effect of the Obama administration. He has made Britain relatively more evil as a nation.
Oh, that's true.
By making America seem less evil to the Iranian regime, he's made us in Britain more evil. So if there is a sudden surge in racially aggregated violence in Britain, a further lurch towards the far right, or a spike in nicking handbags of old biddies, we'll all know it's because of Obama and his message of peace and racial equality.
Now, Ahmadinejad this week also compared Obama to Bush. Come on, Mahmoud. Does that really have any traction anymore? You just miss your old enemy. It just goes to show he didn't know what he had until it was gone. He should have appreciated the times that they spent together. Now, you know, it's all in the past. The latest and least horrifying technique to keep people off the streets in Iran is particularly imaginative. Now, normally, Iranians only get one or two Hollywood or European movie nights a week. But Iranian state TV's Channel 2 has now increased that to two or three a day, including an upcoming Lord of the Rings marathon where all three films will be shown back to back, hoping to pacify young people and keep them indoors. Although it will be nerds who they'll be pacifying, who are already fairly naturally passive anyway.
So, well, finally, here's my message to Ahmadinejad and the Ayatollah, John. Pick on someone your own size, John. Don't pick on Britain. Iran is geographically seven times as big as Britain. That's not fair. It's not brave. Pick on Mongolia, or don't you have the balls.
So there you go. There's so much Mahmoud Ahmadinejad from all these bugles that we're going to have to split that in half. And sometime in the future, you'll hear the second part of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Quite amazingly, whilst you're listening to that, John fell off the cliff here at the seaside and landed on the shark that had gone for Andy, killed the shark. John and Andy are okay. They've gone home to see their families. John's gone back to America, Andy's gone back to England. So I guess it'll be a normal bugle next week. This has been Producer Chris. Bye.